Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, for the good martini, we turn to the pages of the New York Times, but they're just reporting on improving poll numbers for the tax bill that passed just before Christmas. Quote, Americans are warming to the Republican tax law and becoming more confident in the economy as a whole. They just aren't sure that President Trump deserves much credit. The tax overhaul that Mr. Trump signed into law just before Christmas remains relatively unpopular and highly polarizing, according to a new poll conducted for the New York Times by SurveyMonkey. But support for the law has grown significantly over the past month, and more Americans believe they will receive a tax cut. 46% of Americans strongly or somewhat approved of the law in early January, up from 37% when the bill was nearing passage in December. At the same time, falling unemployment, accelerating economic growth, and a surging stock market have made Americans increasingly positive about both their own finances and the overall economy. That could be good news for Republicans hoping to overcome Mr. Trump's unpopularity in the midterm elections. Overall, 42% of Americans believe the national economy is better than it was a year ago. Only 23% believe the economy is worse. Ordinarily, such figures would bode well for the Republicans heading into the midterms. However, most Americans said Mr. Trump's policies had either hurt the economy or had little effect on it. Only 38% said his policies had made it better. So, Jim, a good economy is usually pretty good for the incumbent party. So that's good. More people realizing that this legislation was actually a good thing. But what we may be seeing here is that even good policy may not be enough to overcome the natural revulsion a lot of people have for the president, most likely due to his personality. And it'll be interesting to see whether that translates to other Republicans on the ballot this year.
It's really surprising how badly the tax cut was polling in December. And you could say, okay, this is the media telling people that they're going to get a tax hike, that they themselves won't benefit from it, that it's all going to those corporate fat cats and all the usual rhetoric that the Democrats have. But I'm looking back, it's really kind of interesting. Back in December, you asked people, do you approve of the tax plan? The approval amongst Republicans was only 79%. 17% said they disapproved. Maybe some of those folks really wanted to see simplification, but are you sure you're a Republican? You're a Republican and you don't like the Republican tax cut plan? Really? You sure? Now, that's down to 11% now, which is good news. Also kind of interesting, the number of Democrats have shifted a little bit. The approval amongst Democrats went from 8% to 13%. Democratic disapproval of the tax cuts dropped from 90% to 85%. Now, the other interesting thing was that, Republicans argued with good justification that the entire discussion of the tax cuts was so one-sided and biased that a lot of people were convinced they were going to get a tax hike. Now, people may remember in previous podcasts, I went through the numbers and said, look, there is a set of circumstances in which you can get a tax hike. Generally, it would mean if you're deducting an unbelievable amount of state and local taxes and you're relatively income poor. So picture yourself owning an enormous amount of property and having to pay property taxes every year, but not actually having that much income. Maybe, but that doesn't seem like a particularly common scenario. And USA Today had run the numbers and found the time person who'd be getting a tax cut would be a millionaire who owns no property, rents, has no kids, and is not married. I'm sure those people exist, but again, you're only going to get a tax hike of about $1,800 on an income, not a net worth, but an income of $1 million. I think those folks will be fine. So back in December, the numbers just amongst Republicans, never mind amongst the Democrats, Republicans were only 50% of Republicans thought they'd get a tax cut. 47% thought they would not. Those numbers have improved. 63% think they will get one. 34% think they won't. But even amongst Republicans, you'd think that would be better. The numbers are going in the right direction amongst every demographic, but I just thought it was very interesting to see that at least as of December, a decent number of Republicans were not that on board with the Republican tax cut plan.
Let's move on to the kind of a natural follow-up to that. The economy is getting better, but will it actually benefit Republicans? We're seeing in a couple of state races that's not necessarily a guarantee. Let's focus on one in particular. Last night, as you write in the Jolt today, a corner of western Wisconsin held a special election for an open state Senate seat. The previous Republican incumbent, Sheila Harsdorf of Rivers Falls, held the seat for 17 years. But last night, Democrat Patty Shachner defeated Republican Assemblyman Adam Jarchow, or Jarchow, I don't know for sure, and it wasn't that close, 55% to 44%. Last night, in a series of tweets, Governor Scott Walker said the special election was, quote, a wake-up call for Republicans in Wisconsin. Still quoting the governor, can't presume that voters know we're getting positive things done in Wisconsin. Help us share the good news. Can't presume voters know that more people are working than ever before. Help us share the good news. Can't presume that voters know we invested more actual dollars into schools than ever before. Help us share the good news, unquote. So, Jim, Walker is right in the sense that the only way this year is not going to be a bloodbath for Republicans is that the base gets excited about what's actually been accomplished with Republicans in control and they show up to vote. Nonetheless, this is obviously going to be a very difficult, challenging year.
It was Jeff Goldstein, who is a contributor to NR. He's on Esoteric CD on Twitter, does a lot of election analysis. And he's saying, you know, I think if they'd held the Georgia 6th District special election now, Democrat John Ossoff would have won. Now, there's no way to you know, prove that. But it is worth noting that in the first couple of months of 2016, Republicans did okay in some generally Republican-leaning districts for special House elections. And they thought, oh, okay, we're doing great. Now, if you look at the second half of 2017, when there were some special state legislative races, Republicans did not do okay. And in fact, we saw the results we saw in Virginia. Democrats expanded on their majorities in New Jersey. Maybe you say, okay, that's New Jersey. Look, Democrats managed to flip a seat in the New Hampshire state's house. They flipped two state house seats in Georgia. And then they won a narrow upset victory in Oklahoma, not too far from Tulsa. These are not diehard lefty districts. And you might say, Jim, you know, this is just special state legislative races. Who pays attention to this stuff? It's an off year. Last night in Wisconsin, it's January. It's the middle of winter, probably a really low turnout. Who's paying attention to that? Well, yeah, except traditionally it's Republicans who pay attention to this sort of thing. When there is an out of the usual calendar special election, and particularly for a lower profile race like state legislature, this is traditionally when Republicans have the advantage. Our voters are the ones who are supposed to be more likely to turn out and pay attention to these sorts of things. And the Democrats are supposed to have the ones that are unmotivated and can't be bothered and don't really pay much attention outside of primaries and the November elections. So this really should be a blinking red sign for Republicans to say, wait a second, you know, one or two, maybe you could explain by outside circumstances the, you know, what you look at when you look at state legislative race after state legislative race is that this is a really bad environment for Republicans. And that they're losing in places you'd think would be safe. This was the previous Republican had held this seat for about 17 years. Obama had won it marginally. Trump had won it by a pretty solid margin. This is the sort of area Republicans, you know, should be doing okay, and they're not. So, you know, if you're at the NRCC, the Senate races, and the Republican Governors Association, I think the lesson is you can't take anything for granted in 2018. And Scott Walker is completely right to sound the alarm. And it would be nice to get every Republican recognizing we need to get our base to wake up and pay attention and get out there and get enthused, or else 2018 will be a bloodbath. And we all know what that leads to. In all likelihood, an impeachment attempt on Trump. It will probably pass the House. Probably wouldn't survive the Senate, but, more problems down the road for the Republican Party.
Yeah, certainly the case. And if it's a bloodbath at the state level, that means when the census happens in 2020, Democrats are in charge of redistricting congressional seats after the 2020 census in many cases. So a lot to be concerned about there. Jim, let's move to our crazy martini now. And our crazy martini played out yesterday for about an hour in the White House press room. Dr. Ronny Jackson is the president's personal physician. The president had his physical last week, and Dr. Jackson came in to give a lot of precise information about what the president's test showed. They did a bunch of scans and so forth. And the bottom line is everything looks pretty good, including a point-by-point cognitive exam, which the president scored a perfect 30 for 30 on. But that wasn't good enough for the White House press corps. There were questions, first of all, like this.
Could you just elaborate in layman's terms if possible, and you've been doing a great job at that, what you ruled out in these cognitive tests? There have been reports that the president has forgotten names, that right. He's repeating himself. Are you ruling out things like early onset Alzheimer's? Are you looking at dementia-like symptoms?
And a very clear answer from the doctor.
This test is sensitive enough, it would pick up on it. He would not have got 30 out of 30 on the test. So I'm very confident at this particular stage that he has nothing like that going on.
Oh, but that's not good enough for the press corps. Lots more questions essentially asking the same thing. This is courtesy of Grabian, which compiled all of these questions. CNN's Jim Acosta asked Jackson, just to make sure we're clear on this, when you analyze his cognitive ability or neurological functions, that's not the same thing as a psychiatric exam? And Jackson went on to explain that this test determines whether you need a follow-up in any of those areas, and in this case, President Trump does not. Another reporter asked, there have been some questions as part of your examination, the president's mental fitness. He's pushed back on that. Can you assess the president's mental fitness for office? Then another reporter wondered if removing Trump via the 25th Amendment was still possible. Quote, a follow-up on the philosophy of the fitness of the president. A lot of people in the country have been talking about it. Contemplates a group of Senate-confirmed laymen will see if the president will discharge the duties of the office. Given some thought during your role, on what basis would you advise the cabinet that the president is not able to discharge his duties? And then another one said, what do you think about all these other doctors around the country who see symptoms of dementia? So, Jim, as I mentioned, this press conference took about an hour, but I think it really boils down to one question, which is really what the media meant in all this is, doctor, we've been openly and irresponsibly speculating that this president has dementia and is unfit under the 25th Amendment to hold office. Can't you throw us a bone here?
Greg, I have one kind of follow-up question. So who checks the White House press corps for dementia? Look, Trump says a lot of strange things. He says a lot of weird things, profane, off-color, inappropriate things. He is impulsive. He is erratic. People have said that he's most likely to agree with the position of the last person he speaks with before a major decision. Trump's got a lot of flaws, people. But for starters, I tend to think that the official White House physician, the one who was appointed by Obama and checked out Obama a bunch of times, that if he saw either a huge health issue or the fact that the president's alphabet did not go all the way to Z, I think he would tell us. I don't believe he'd be involved in this grand conspiracy to cover up the fact that the president is nuts and or about to keel over from a heart attack. I saw this morning that Sanjay Gupta on CNN was saying he believes, looked on based on the released numbers, that you can make the argument that the president has heart disease. Other people looked at the numbers and say, no, it gets down to your calcium levels and stuff like that. Greg, am I the only one who kind of feels like, well, this is all going to prove itself one way or another in the coming years? I mean, like if he really has heart disease, he's on the verge of having a heart attack. Well, then, I guess he's going to have a heart attack. I guess we'll see that. We're going to know one way or the other about the president's health by the end of his presidency, right? I mean, either he's healthy enough to do the job or he's not. If he's genuinely mentally disturbed, then he will probably start claiming that, the dogs are talking to him or something like that or things like that. Like by and large, I felt like he should come out yesterday and say, ladies and gentlemen, this is as sane as the president gets, that there is no discernible decline in the president's facilities, intellect, mental stability or anything like that. This is the same guy you elected, America. This is the same guy who was on the campaign trail a little more than a year ago. This is the same guy who was on The Apprentice. There's really not much reason to think this is dramatically different, other than maybe reacting to the stress. And regarding the president's weight, let's face it, if you had the most important job in the world, you might be stress eating too. So it kind of strikes me as a giant non-issue or an issue that, look, I don't buy any of the conspiracy theories. And if you really don't like the president, you think he's remarkably unhealthy and he's eating McDonald's all the time and doesn't actually, first of all, if you don't think he's exercising enough, you shouldn't complain about his golfing, right? He gets out there, he's walking around. Yeah, he probably drives, rides the cart too much, but he's out, he's doing something, he's getting fresh air. God bless him. If you really hate the president, then maybe you want him to eat all the McDonald's and all that kind of stuff. I don't really see, I don't really get what people want to do here other than, well, I really hate Trump and everything about him is terrible, blah, 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 blah. And they just want to fume about something. You know what they want to do, Greg? They want to let out their inner Cory Bookers.
I think the point you made a few minutes ago is the one that people simply can't grasp. How is this Trump different than the public Trump we've known for the last 30 years? He's exactly the same. And so now you've got conspiracy theories like Maggie Haberman of the New York Times tweeting, on Trump's previous physical, he was 6'2". Now he's 6'3". If he was 6'2 and 239 pounds, he'd be obese. But since he's 6'3 and 239, he's just overweight. Interesting change there.
For anyone asking, you can measure me. I am 6'2". I will break out the tape measure, break out, put me up against the wall. I will do all that kind of stuff. But let's face it, if slightly exaggerating your height by an inch or two is a crime, then our prisons will be even more overcrowded than they already are. Yes, Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is 6 feet even. Totally, honestly, absolutely. Not standing on a telephone book at all.
Baker Mayfield, for those of you who don't know, is the Heisman Trophy winner, played for Oklahoma University, and will probably be a very well-paid NFL quarterback soon. But he's not the tallest guy, and usually height is a prerequisite for being pretty good at that position. But he did well without it. So, but yeah, there might have been a little fudging on that. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.